door, slam shut, and it's on.
That's pretty darn creepy.
Listen, this is gonna sound totally crazy, and I know that, but I'm having this feeling lately that maybe whatever happened to us when we were little, I think it's starting again.
I don't want to talk about this, Christy.
I just remember being scared all the time.
Whatever it was, it thrived on fear. The more we paid attention to it, the worse it got. You need to leave this alone.
Welcome to Now Playing's Paranormal Activity Retrospective Series.
You promised me you weren't going to mess with that stuff.
You cannot run from this. It will follow you.
Hosted by Arnie.
They just about think he's the coolest guy ever.
Jacob.
I know that elders like Jacob can feel kind of intense, but as long as you stick with me, you'll be fine.
And Stuart.
There are these malevolent evil spirits that only exist to cause pain and commit evil for their own amusement.
This podcast will contain harsh language, movie spoilers, and may try to scare you with loud, sudden banging.
And you're not in control. It is in control. And if you think you're in control, then you're being an idiot.
Listener discretion is advised.
You know, we can't just let this affect us that much. If we do that, the terrorists win.
Today we're discussing Paranormal Activity 4, starring people I've actually seen in other things.
You have?
Yeah, Catherine Newton. Yeah, she's a real actress.
Starring Catherine Newton, who was in Lady Bird and Detective Pikachu, and is going to be in the upcoming Ant-Man film.
Three Billboards. Yeah. Yeah, no, she's definitely a working actress. She's actually their biggest star that will ever be in this movie.
And Matt Shively?
Okay, you lost me there.
Yeah, I mean.
No, it was Catherine Newton. That was it. They got someone that like has a real career now.
Aidan Lovecamp, Brady Allen, Stephen Dunham?
You say these names like we're supposed to go, oh yeah, him.
No, he did nothing and then he died right after they filmed this.
I'm sorry, I know him from the first Mummy film, which I watch a lot, so.
But what does he do in that? That's Brendan Fraser, Mike.
Yeah, he's the other guy.
Okay, yeah, the one I don't remember.
And then Alexandra Lee, who's done a lot of television.
Wow, how many Hallmark movies?
I'm sorry, I remember her from her time on Picket Fences. And Katie Featherston, directed by Henry Joost and Ariel Schulman.
Catfishing us this time.
This is Arnie, the co-host of Now Playing, who has podcasting activity for you.
And Stuart.
Artie, you really do have to stretch it for these. Hey, this is Jacob. You guys want to have a space dance party?
I do. I actually think I really do. I mean, it was a party. Last time, Jacob, you and I gave recommends. It's the biggest opener for the franchise.
Participation trophy recommend. It was like, it's fine for this.
Yeah, no, but look, a win is a win. I'm not going to sit here and split the hair with a razor blade. I went over the line and said green. Every entry has been better than the last. If it was working, you know, don't change anything. Let's get the same directors, same writer, the same budget, and do it 1 year later. These things should take care of themselves. But the interesting thing is, this is where the fall off happens.
Yeah, I can't believe this is all the same people that did the one that I kind of, sort of, maybe liked.
Catfish guys, the guy who's been writing since part two, $5 million budget. They really didn't want to touch, you know, why would you want to touch and change anything to this?
Why invest any more money into this? Yeah, it's a cash cow.
Yeah, it should be easy. So what went wrong? Like, I have three theories on that. One, part four, that's a curse, right? Trilogies people like. By part four, we're over it.
One of the best Nightmare on Elm Streets is part four. Second best.
According to you. But yes, in general, I don't think that the rule is totally without merit. Most of the time, part fours are inglorious.
Alien Resurrection is better than Alien 3.
I mean, these are your opinions.
A lot of people share them. It's not like I'm an outlier here.
No, I get what you're saying, Stuart. Like, part four, you're like, I don't need this anymore. I'm done. But you're saying it didn't do good. Like, what? It only made 20 times its budget? Like, what are you saying when you're saying this wasn't successful?
What I'm saying is the last movie opened at $50 million and made $100 million, and this one opened at $30 million and made $54 million.
Oh, darn. Only 10 times its money. 11 times its money almost this time.
I also think there was just a proliferation of found footage movies around this time. I remember Chronicle, that Josh Trank film that I didn't like, but everybody else does.
It's okay.
You talked about VHS. That was around this time.
None of those were making this kind of money. And further, the idea that this is the reason more things become a hit like this. 2 years later, we get Unfriended, which is literally just people sitting in front of their laptops.
Yeah, that's the movie I was thinking about this whole movie.
Yeah, or John Cho did one where he was trying to find his daughter. That was like 4 years later.
Searching, yeah.
Yeah, and that was a hit. So I don't think it was just that people were over found footage. Was it that there was something else drawing people away from the movie theater? I looked up what was... The only horror movies that were out there were Sinister, which had been out for 2 weeks prior, and Hotel Transylvania, if that even counts.
A surprisingly good Adam Sandler. Now, it's only his voice, but Hotel Transylvania, yeah. It's not going to get the adults, but it's going to get the adults with their kids.
I don't think it took the box office away. I think... The third theory is the correct one. Word of mouth on this was, we don't like it. The CineScore. You know, when people go and they rate, like, audience reactions.
They always give everything an A on those.
Everything is an A. Every bad movie that you're like, well, that was junk, it got, like, a B+.
Yeah, the worst I've really seen is a B-, and that means they hate it.
Well, this got a CineScore of C.
Ooh, it's garbage.
Yeah.
Well, we're done. I mean, recommends? I mean, obviously we don't if it got a CineScore of C. That is up there with the Axis of Evil to be a C.
Yeah, I mean, you really, really have to displease people. Now, I just want to put it out there. I've seen plenty of good movies that got low CineScores. And it just means that, commercially speaking, people that watch movies in malls that like had a free afternoon and got dragged into this didn't enjoy it. That's what it meant.
Well, good news for movies. Those casual viewers don't exist anymore.
Exactly. And I do think that this is where the franchise falls off. Like 5, 6, part 7 is essentially a TV movie. I feel like the scope of Paranormal Activity only got smaller after this entry.
And it didn't start big.
Yeah. Joost and Schulman, the Catfish guys, they go and make Catfish the Show and some other kind of found footage movie called Nerve, where people are daring each other to do crazy things on camera.
Oh, yeah, that wasn't really found footage. It was not bad, though.
Yeah. The point is, we've done all we can do here, and we will have a creative reshuffling. What comes next probably won't feel as much in line as what we've seen so far.
And yet, what comes next? We'll talk about it. But they knew what was coming in the fifth movie before the fourth movie even opened.
Yeah, same screenwriter. Again, this Christopher Landon probably has them all worked out to part 27. You know, he really, at this point, it becomes his show. If there's a creative impulse that continues on, it's obviously Blum is producing. And yeah, this guy is gonna tell whatever happens next. But let's get into this movie. Tell them if anything happens. Is there any activity, paranormal or otherwise, in this plot? Arnie, tell me, because I've almost forgot.
I can already tell I like this movie best of the three of us.
I mean, that's kind of been, yeah, the theme throughout these.
Yeah, I mean, it's mostly been the case.
With Paranormal Activity 4, we're almost in real time again as we're witnessing tapes recorded in October and November of 2011, and the movie came out in 2012. This time we follow the Nelson family, primarily teenage daughter Alex Nelson, played by Catherine Newton. Alex has a 5-year-old adopted brother Wyatt, and they both live with their parents Doug Nelson, played by Stephen Dunham, and Holly Nelson, played by Alexandra Lee. The family gets a fifth member, though, temporarily, little boy Robbie, who's about Wyatt's age. Robbie's mother just moved in across the street, but she became ill and was taken to the hospital. With no one to watch Robbie, Holly Nelson volunteers to keep the boy for a few days. Robbie seems very strange, though, and does weird things like stare at Alex for hours in the night as she sleeps. He also talks to an imaginary friend called Toby. Weirded out by this, Alex gets her boyfriend Ben to set all the house laptops to record footage for them to review.
Spyware for everyone.
You worry about Chinese hackers? No, it's your daughter's boyfriend.
Yeah. Much more worried about daughter's boyfriends than hackers from China.
These spy cams record Robbie drawing strange symbols on Wyatt, books falling on their own, a kitchen knife flying to the ceiling, and other forms of paranormal activity. Alex Googles the symbol drawn on her little brother and discovers it's a Hittite symbol that prepares a person for demonic possession, though the ritual requires virgin sacrifice. Robbie's mother comes back home and we see it's Katie from the first two films, again played by Katie Featherston. Alex is too happy to have the strange boy gone, but the disturbances keep happening in the house. More, Wyatt now claims his name is Hunter. Finally, things reach a climax. An unseen force lifts Holly up and smashes her to the ground, presumably dead. Katie sneaks into the Nelson house and breaks Ben's neck, hiding him in the closet. Father Doug is taken by an unseen force into Katie's house, and Alex gives chase. In that house, she sees Katie with a demonic face. Alex jumps into the yard where Wyatt is waiting, as well as a huge coven of witches. The camera drops to the ground and credits roll, and we don't even get end titles to let us know if Alex died.
I gotta ask, just for the movie overall, like, what is, I get the spyware with the cameras filming, but like, all the other footage, like, I'm having a hard time figuring out why, like, these have to be found footage, but I don't even know why half this footage is being shot with a camera this time around.
Well, this is something that I think is lost on people in 2021, but what the directors were really proud about was the fact, I don't know if this is true or not, I didn't, like, go and verify it, but they're claiming this is the first movie where laptop computers are the primary camera. Like, that was a relatively novel thing for the idea that people were going to instant message in front of the laptop and talk on camera. This is the first movie to really take advantage of that. So it was novel.
I'll believe it fully, because if you guys recall, we were doing Now Playing back then, and we couldn't use video as we discussed the movies because bandwidth was so crappy that our recordings would break up if we also did video. And we had good bandwidth for the time, but video chatting, FaceTime was barely a thing in 2011. It wasn't out with the first version of the iPhone. It slowly became more adopted, and video on Skype, video on Zoom, these things have slowly grown until the explosion post-COVID, but I would completely believe this is the first movie to think, hey, you know what? Macs all come with this little lens on top of them. PCs didn't back then, but Macs did. So let's use that as a way to film the movie.
And I get that, because every film, like, I gotta imagine this is what takes the most brainstorming. Like, what unique camera trick are we gonna do for this film? So they got, yes, these laptop cameras throughout, but like, we open up, it's Halloween, and I get it. Okay, the boyfriend, maybe he's filming because it's Halloween, but whenever they go to handhelds, I just don't even understand why, like, at the climax of this, why Alex has a handheld camera and filming all that.
I have an answer at the end.
Well, actually, I just want to point out, you're starting with Halloween if you're watching the unrated cut.
Oh, that's what I watched.
This movie did come in two different versions. One's about 9 minutes longer than the other.
I watched the version that said it had footage too scary for theaters. I don't know what footage that was.
Yeah, you watched something different than me, because nothing was scary.
And it should be said, before all of this, it's more of a catch-up than anything new, but they did reestablish 2006, the idea that Aunt Katie, and just the names, right? Like, you'll remember that there was this, like, killer suburban Karen, but, like, yeah, there was a baby and a Karen, and their names are Katie and Hunter. That gets established.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, right, this happened all at the end of part two. I couldn't believe it, though. I'm like, besides that little journey to the 80s we took last time, are all these going to take place in 2006? I thought it was going to be like a direct continuation of Katie taking little baby Hunter, but no, that's just to remind us.
You know what? We didn't know where they were going to go, and I was kind of fascinated about who would they pick up on. I actually thought that they might... What was the character that was the daughter that was still alive from part two? Like, I felt like she would have been someone in 2006 that you could have followed and stayed in that timeline. But yeah, they're going to pick up with new characters and tease the idea that Hunter is what you want to know about. Arnie, I think you said that. You want to know what happened to Hunter? This is a movie to tell you a little bit more about that.
Very little.
Yeah, I definitely wanted to go forward, not back. And so seeing this prologue, that's what it's telling me. I figure Katie's going to be back. She's been in all of the modern day ones. So I'm kind of looking forward to seeing where this goes and who's filming. It's obviously not going to be her family this time around. That's the big change. In the past three, it's always been a member of Katie's family as the main characters. And here, yeah, we have an entirely new family, the Nelsons.
Yeah, maybe this is a little bit of Catfish, right? It's always about like these uncomfortable romantic pairings. The star of this, that's probably wise to do. The primary audience for this are young people, and so you want a teenage girl as your heroine. We're going to have Alex Nelson taking a lot more interest in her younger brother than my older brother ever did at this age. And she's going to be filming it all the time. And then she has this kind of, she keeps him around because she kind of likes him, but mostly she likes the attention. Ben, I don't know. He just is this sucker that gets blue balled by her all the time.
Yeah, Stuart, he's Big Ben. You know why she's keeping him around.
Yeah, no, but she's not. That's again. I know. Those are jokes that she tells at the same time that when he's reaching out to touch her, she's like, yeah, no.
No, I did feel like maybe because it is the Catfish guys, they're in tune with the MTV kids and all that. I did feel like the behaviors were about right. Like, you know, with these found footage, they got to feel naturalistic. They got to feel more true to life because they are going for that documentary style. And I feel like they got, yeah, the two teenagers, they got that relationship more or less right.
Yeah, I actually am going to say that one thing this movie does very well is picking its main characters. I wish Ben was in this movie more.
He drops out for a long time.
Yeah, and that disappoints the hell out of me.
Why do you wish this?
I actually enjoy their chemistry on screen. I like that Ben's a bit of a nerd that has all these computer skills that's going to enable the recordings.
Nerd or pervert?
I don't know. I feel like a lot of ideas, frankly, a lot of relationships are teased and then I don't know if they didn't film it, didn't make the final cut or what, but I don't know how I'm supposed to feel about Ben, but I'm okay with him not being in this movie that much. I don't even get what Halloween costume he's going for. Maybe the reason why they cut this out of the theatrical version is that the big punchline is everyone thinks he's in the Village People or a bank robber. And when we finally see his Halloween costume, he's a cowboy or he's Woody?
He's just a cowboy. He's a cowboy, but he's got that bandana, so maybe that's why they call him a bank robber. It was not a good joke. I was expecting a better costume.
No.
Mm-mm.
I don't get that one.
Yeah, I thought maybe it was Woody from Toy Story? I don't know. I don't get it. The whole point of Halloween, the whole reason you might want to retain it is, yes, it's identifying who's going to be filming everything, who's going to be in front of the camera playing to it. We have this Alex character who's very narcissistic and likes to be on camera and likes to tease. And then we have this other Wyatt kid running around who I don't think we're supposed to suspect is Hunter. We're supposed to suspect the kid that just moved in across the street.
And I totally did. So who's this kid who moved in across the street?
Yeah, I am so confused because I'm like, wow, they're really going to try to make us think Robbie isn't Hunter. Like, I know where this is going when these neighbors move in. They can't even do a twist properly. And then, like, they surprise me, but it doesn't make no sense. It's still not a proper twist.
Yeah, I don't know who Robbie is. I guess the devil's unloved stepchild. But yeah, Robbie and his unseen mom. It's really just Robbie keeps popping up in all of this early footage. That's basically the family goofing off, taping Wyatt at his soccer game, hanging out late at night after a party. And yeah, Robbie just keeps popping up. He's the creepy kid.
But yes, when a new neighbor's moving in across the street, I have no question who that is. That is obviously going to be Katie.
Yeah, and then we don't even see her, I don't think, until much later on when...
No, it's a surprise. They're withholding it. You're not supposed to guess that.
Is it a surprise? Really? We're not supposed to know? Like, what's weird to me is that Katie, who we don't know is Katie, apparently, like, she has to go to the hospital one night. Like, the ambulances come. And I guess they're just like, hey, Robbie's here. Do you guys want to watch him? And the Nelsons are just super nice and take this kid in.
Okay, so there's something that's very much heavily teased. And I don't know that it's a great surprise that it ends up surprised. I'm totally wrong about this. But this dynamic that Alex's parents are always seen in the background kind of bickering. She talks about maybe they're planning a divorce or something like that. You would believe, with the way that the mom is so quick to adopt Robbie and many of the things that she does, that she is in on it, that she is actually a part of this coven that is plotting all of this.
No, I didn't think that at all.
Well, there, I can point to 20 things that tell you that you're supposed to. Like, they definitely tease the idea that she knows things that are suspicious.
Yeah, I agree with you, Stuart, because I'm just wondering why she would do this. That's what made the most sense, is that she's part of this coven, and, like, this is some plan of theirs.
Right, starting with the idea, a woman just went to the hospital, and we're just going to take our kid for a couple of weeks. That is highly suspicious.
I thought it was weird. I thought it was bad writing, but I never thought mother was in on it.
Well, that would be the only rational explanation. That's why I went with it.
The thing is, it's not a rational explanation, because the way I'm taking it is, this is a normal family that is going to have the paranormal done to them. And by believing that as the entire basis of my watching this movie, if one of them was in on it, then it would invalidate the premise.
Well, here's the problem. There are no rational answers to this film, because I don't know why Katie and Robbie are there. Like, Hunter is established. Like, I don't know why they're showing up. I don't know how Hunter ended up with his family. No answers. Nothing given in this film.
Yeah, let's just go back to what 2006 told us. Katie ran off in the middle of the night with an infant, and then somehow she decided to put it in foster care for a while. And it is now renamed Wyatt.
Before she got arrested? Like, wasn't she suspected of the murders?
She was, but she never got arrested.
Isn't that why it was police footage? How?
She's a phantom. She's a monster. She didn't get arrested. Like, she's out there doing demonic things.
Remember, it said in the titles, even at the beginning of part four, she was never seen again. So nobody knows what happened to her. We're discovering what happened to her when we watch this movie.
We're not discovering. They're telling us she moved into some home in Nevada. We don't know what she's been up to for the last 5 years.
The only thing that I can take is, for a period of time, she sent this important child away. And he is important because he is the firstborn male of her lineage. Her sister's kid is the first male that there has been since the 1930s. And now that he's becoming six, they need another ceremony of something. They need to take him back.
Yeah, this is an omen situation all of a sudden. I thought Toby just, like, possessed you. But no, we got to sacrifice virgins. There's got to be, like, I think there's, like, hundreds of witches at the end of this film. There are so many.
This is why I didn't even like the introduction of the coven in part three, is because it opens the doors for this kind of shit.
Yes, for some actual storytelling where they got to come up with, like, some ideas. Yeah, how awful that they actually need to come up with something.
I just liked the purity of demonic hauntings.
That's not going to last seven films.
The purity, it was so thin. There was nothing, like, again, they were running out of things to do. There's only so many doors that can be opened and closed.
And yet they're still doing it this movie.
Yeah, we got three more movies to go after this.
Well, let's talk about that, because this is exactly so. We've had three movies, and in each new installment, it's told us a lot more about what was going on in the backstory as this screenwriter has had more and more creative control. Christopher Landon is inheriting all of this. He is now the only one writing this. And so I take it to mean that he really has all the ideas probably worked out about who is what and why they need to do this. But I don't feel, help me out with this.
I can't.
I don't feel like I learn anything that the previous movies didn't already at least imply in this movie.
No, this makes it more confusing.
In fact, I'll agree with that and take it a step further. This asks more questions at the end. It provides zero answers and asks more questions, like, how did Hunter end up for adoption?
Yeah, how did Hunter end up with the Nelson? Who the hell is Robbie? Why does Katie go to the hospital and then come back? And, like, why did the coven just come up? Like, you gotta really develop this. You got, like, part four, like, we should know this, like, the back of our hand, and I feel more lost than ever.
Yeah, but let's go through it, because that's what we're here to do. All right, so Robbie is coming to stay. Robbie, I'm wondering if that's Oliver Robbins from Poltergeist. I'm always suspecting Poltergeist illusions here.
Oh, I definitely think that there's so many horror movie nods in this one that, yes, I bet that is exactly the reason.
Yeah, I felt like, yeah, we'll get a scene where a kid's riding a bike around and the chairs move. That felt very Poltergeist.
See, I was thinking Shining with that. The fact that the kid's rolling around in a big wheel, I thought for sure they were going Kubrick.
For sure. And again, I think it's part of these guys. I don't think they're pulling one over on us. They know that we know. Like, they're just, isn't it fun to see all of these great horror movie moments done in the real world? Like, they're happening to us in our suburban lives.
Nope, don't feel like they're happening to me.
See, I actually enjoy these nods. I don't think they're trying to pull one over on us. It's an homage, and I take it as such, and I find it kind of cool.
Here's what I don't like. A lot, like strongly, is the idea that we are going to spend a lot of time with Robbie doing weird things. And usually the payoff is because at the end, something's going to come out of the door that he's been staring at in the middle of the night, or something that he's doing, that magic fork that he pulls out is going to be used to gouge someone's eye or something. What did Robbie do?
Yeah, does that fork ever come back?
Nothing that Robbie does, even the symbols, never really seem to matter.
The symbols matter, but the rest does not.
Yeah, but I don't know who Robbie is or why he's doing this. Like, I thought for sure, once I found out that Wyatt is actually Hunter, I'm like, okay, Robbie's just going to be Toby. Like, he's taking some kind of human form, and we're going to see, like, a shadow morph into, like, a that goat thing, like, with the hooves that we saw the flower from in the first one. Like, I really thought once Hunter was established as Wyatt that Robbie was going to be something supernatural. He may be. I may be right. This movie doesn't tell us.
Why does Robbie go in the middle of the night and get in Alex's bed? Because she's going to be the virgin sacrifice?
Maybe, sure, why not?
He has a crush. I remember crushing on my babysitters when I was that age.
And that's fine, but this is a movie about documenting paranormal activity. Like, we want to understand what he is setting up. I feel like they really, in trying to pull the twist on us, make something that makes no sense. Obviously, he should be the missing child. And instead, they wanted to have it be like, oh, Wyatt's adopted too. We find that out really late.
Let me turn this around, though, okay? I agree. I think all three of us thought Wyatt was a normal kid and Robbie is Hunter.
He's the target for Hunter. Yes. I'm going to jump into his body or something.
Yeah, that is exactly where my question was, is what would be Katie's goal in sending Hunter over to stay with this family? What is the gain there? Mm-hmm. And the fact that she's trying to retrieve Hunter at least helps have a somewhat logical goal.
Not really, when you consider when she got Hunter initially, she just kind of walked into nursery and threw her sister against the camera and walked out. Like, why all of this 12 nights of craziness then? Like, just go get him.
And where did she get another kid? Like, yeah, exactly. None of this, it might make sense. We just don't know.
Why did you ever give him up? I'll tell you the key to understanding any of this. And I really, really did believe that this would be the movie to talk about Toby. But I... Yeah. Don't understand. They bring it back, and I believe maybe only in the extended cut, but maybe in the theatrical, you hear the words. When the kids are playing with the video game system, it is Ben, the cameraman, who says something about an imaginary friend named Toby. That is the only reference to Toby in this entire movie that I could pick up, is that there's a filmed moment in the living room where they're having a dance party, and then later we're going to see some ghost kid sitting next to Robbie. You put one and one together and say, okay, that's Invisible Toby hanging out with Robbie.
There's also the scene in the treehouse where the two boys are there and Alex comes up.
They never mention his name.
They never mention a name, but they mention an imaginary friend, so...
Yes.
You know, and having seen part three, I imagine the imaginary friend to be Toby.
And I don't know if they're just saying Toby to remind us, hey, remember part three? It's establishing it's that same demon. Because I feel like growing up, Katie and her sister, like, they never referenced Toby. They only did that as children. I don't even know if they remember that name.
I assumed that Toby was just a way of talking about the devil. Like, the devil is the invisible force that's trying to get this child for whatever reason. And now I'm confused. Now we have three evil kids, and I don't know why.
We have three evil kids?
Yeah, Robbie, Wyatt, and Toby.
Oh, the ghost kid being one. See, and Toby is supposed to be tall and don't call him fat, so...
Oh, that's true, but when we see him, let's talk about this other thing that's going on. Another, not only is this a movie that loves to show that the camera comes from the laptop, but there's some kind of video game system here with dots.
Yeah, no, this is this Xbox Kinect. I never had one. I think you did, Arnie. Didn't you dance with Han Solo? like make him dance and do those moves. Like
after the Wii became a hit, everybody was jumping on the real motion thing, and the Kinect was one step further where you didn't even need to have a controller in your hand. It did 3D body motion. And this was a big thing on YouTube that, yes, it tracked your motion by projecting a whole bunch of infrared dots that you couldn't see unless you turned off the lights and then put your camera in, like, Paris Hilton mode.
So this is real. Like, you could actually do this. I thought this was all made up because they're not consistent. Like, there are times where the dad's watching TV and you still see all those Xbox lights all over the place.
I felt like there was way too much light in some of the shots where we're seeing these dots. But I'll give the film this. If it wants to be spooky, I am staring at these pixels and going through them one by one to try to find if any of them are moving and there's a ghost there. And unfortunately, when there is a ghost there, it's really poorly animated. It's so obvious and bad.
You only get it like once.
No, one other time he's sitting on the sofa.
Yeah, that's what I remember.
Oh, I thought that was Katie who was sitting still and then stood up. Like, I know they do a shot with her in there too. But I was expecting a whole lot more fun. Like, I'm like, this is kind of a neat gimmick to have these Xbox Kinect dots all over the place in the dark, and you can do some, yeah, really cool animation things. I guess because they're so cheap, like, they can't do anything cool. They could just do static shots for a really long time.
It is because of this video game moment that Alex takes it. I mean, there have been a couple other times where she's been weirded out about Robbie because, again, he's staring at kitchen doors or something. They're running around or something. But in the end, I don't know why she's so convinced her house is possessed. But she gets Ben to rig things up, and we're back to the night one, night two, night three format that we know from the other movies.
Is it she thinks the house is possessed, or is it she thinks that Robbie's really weird and she wants to keep an eye on everything going on?
No, she uses language like Robbie has brought something evil in here.
Okay, that's true.
But I think it is when Ben reveals that he's like doing screen captures and filming her sleeping, and that Robbie got into that bed with her. Like, that is the big spooky moment that sets her off. And I gotta say, we get to the night one, night two stuff all 25 minutes in, part four, like, boom, let's just get into it. Like, let's get to the scares. Almost a half hour, a third of this film devoted to just talking.
Particularly if you watch the unrated, there's even more like moments of worthlessness where I guess they're trying for scares, but like Alex tries to have the kids watching a video of birds, and then you've seen those videos, right?
Yeah, that was a popular thing on YouTube. Yeah, where it's something real peaceful and a scary face jumps out.
And now, like, a normal kid would be scared, but Robbie is not scared. Like, yeah, if these are the moments that are meant to go, ooh, creepy, like, it seems like they had so many of those, too many of those last movie, and they couldn't even get them all in the theatrical cut. And now it feels like, you're right, we're coasting for 30 minutes and almost nothing here. I'll ask the room, is anything here scary?
No.
No. It's never been scary.
Well, I want to ask Arnie. I'll put a finer point to this. Because I've never thought the first movie was ever scary. Ever. Never, ever had a moment of tension. But Arnie, you said that actually late at night, those sound designs, there's something about the footage, the presentation that gets under your skin.
What this movie gave me, again, I did watch this again late at night, dark room, full bass, and I had a feeling of dread during these early scenes. I could see what they were building towards, and I found myself anticipating fear, which is different than being afraid.
Okay. Is that because this is the fourth movie, or because these guys are not as good as disguising their scares?
Because it's the fourth movie, I know what I'm in for, and the acting is legit better. I am pulled more into this film than I have been any of them because I actually am finding myself believing relationships between characters and finding their naturalistic dialogue to make sense more and feel less ad-libbed. And so it feels like more of a movie in that way, which is engaging me more and keeping me less at arm's length.
You're talking about Alex and Ben, right? Because I don't think any of the other acting is anything.
I think the parents are decent.
The parents are barely there.
Yeah, but they're decent. And I actually think both little boys are appropriately creepy.
Last movie, I thought the little girls had good chemistry and were in scary moments. I don't think these little boys have anything going.
for them.
I don't even understand their relationship most of the time. Like, mm-mm. They seem to hang out, but I don't know what one thinks of the other. Like, I don't know what they think of the whole situation.
I just take it as they're young friends, and I remember, you know, being that age and having overnights with friends and, you know, doing silly stuff like running around the house at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, I might remember that banana boat coming by. Yes. But by and large, not something that I feel like if we dug up our old videos and showed it to people, they would be creeped out about. And I really think at this point, by the time they're calling it night one, I'm like, oh my God, where's it coming from? And the fact that they're doing stuff you would want in the first 5 minutes and not the big stuff at this point, they just needed to knock off this format, right? We don't need found footage anymore. You're saying that these are actors giving performances. You want to know these relationships. Why do this again? Why not just, like, let it be a movie?
The movie that kept coming to mind with this one is we're finally at Cloverfield. You kept saying Cloverfield cheats because it's a real big budget movie masking itself as a found footage movie. Here, we're still micro budget at $5 million, but we have a studio backing, we have legitimate actors, and they're choosing to do found footage versus having to do found footage. And I kind of like the laptop thing. I mean, I have some technical problems, like, where is all this being recorded?
Hard drive space, thank you. Does it just delete after every hour, like those dash cam things? Like, yeah, that was a big problem for me.
The other thing is, all the previous movies have told us, basically, somebody found the tapes. Somebody found the footage and watched it, and that's why you were thanking the families of the dead and whatnot. Here, who searched these hard drives and found all this footage? And three, even back then, webcams had a light on them, okay? People are going to notice if their webcam is on. You could set it to record, but I didn't see him cracking the case so that the light didn't come on.
My problem isn't even the found footage thing, really. Like, give me $5 million, I'll make you a scary found footage film. Like Paranormal Activity, where doors are slammed, but scary stuff will happen too. And there'll be explanations and writing. And like, the problem with this isn't necessarily that it's found footage. It's that they don't want to tell us a story yet again.
Yeah. I mean, you can feel them slipping into self-parody. Like, they actually are mocking the big jump scare of the first movie.
Yes. There's
now like this punchline on night two where Ben like sneaks up behind Alex while we all think something is about to happen. And then he drags her out of the bed. You know, the joke is that like it's him, but it's kind of a joke that backfires because by this point, audiences want to be scared. We don't want more parodies. We don't want to see more frivolous behaviors. We want to see whatever's going on in this house. And again, I ask, what has Robbie brought in here? What is happening?
Did he bring anything in? If Wyatt's already Hunter, he's already got that mark on him to become
right.
Toby. I don't understand Robbie at all. Once they reveal that twist, Robbie makes zero sense.
None whatsoever. Is he part of the coven? I don't get it.
I mean, they could have put in a scene where they explained it, but they don't want to do that.
Yeah, again, I think it's all about being able to say fool you to the audience, but it's a joke that backfires on the creators. Because ultimately, if you make us believe something and then twist it so that it's something entirely different, you still have to justify that. Otherwise, we're just mad that you kind of wasted our time. Like, we spent all of this time, Robbie is going to do this thing where he leads all his toys into his closet. It's a very long scene of Alex coming home and hearing noises and going to her room and following the toys and going downstairs, all just so that they can drop a chandelier. This is all you got? I ask again. I seriously want to know what you guys are thinking. So Robbie has brought Toby into this place, and Toby doesn't like the idea that he's being filmed, and
I don't know why, but in the first movie, I didn't know why a demon was starting to possess. These were all retcons from part two, so I'm really just waiting for the movie to explain it. I am not overthinking this. I'm just going with it as a haunting, and how can they up it and keep the game going like they did from part one?
But how can you not overthink it when we just have scenes that just go on for days? I mean, just hours and hours of nothing happening.
I'm going back to what I say in part one and part two. Are you not enjoying some of this family dynamic? Are you not enjoying some of the sister-brother interplay? Because I'm just kind of lackadaisically enjoying watching these performances and these characters interact. I'll admit, when it finally pops up night one, I'm like, wait, this is night one? I thought we were on like night 17 already.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't until the 1 hour mark that I really wanted this film to pick up. That's when I checked the clock. At 1 hour, I'm like, is it going to pick up a little bit? And so I cheated and checked. I'm like, okay, I got a half hour left.
I mean, I was looking at the clock when I wanted to see how long it was taking to get to night one. But yeah, I would say around the hour mark, I started just constantly checking. I'm like, okay, it's been like 20 minutes, right? No, it's been five. Crap. Okay, now it's been like a half hour. No, it's only been another 5 minutes. Like, yeah, it got real painful. I wanted it to end so bad.
And I just want to put it out there because I'm hearing everyone saying that they're loving this new character, this Catherine Newton, Alex character. Like, I just feel like she's in a generic horror movie. Like, this just feels like the Hollywoodization of Paranormal Activity. The thing, Arnie, that you talked about, you didn't want to see this series become. Yeah, now we have these semi-professional actors doing what you expect teenagers in a horror movie to do, and that's not interesting at all. Nor is it believable. I don't believe for a minute that this is a real thing that's happening to her. It feels very much scripted.
No, I was watching this with my daughters, and the whole time they're like, that chandelier falls, we're running out of the house. Like, they were so upset, like, Alex just stayed around in that house for so long.
That chandelier is escalation. I mean, rarely does the demon do things that is a hair's breadth from killing you.
Well, yeah, except they show it so much. Again, my oldest daughter, like, very early into this film, she's like, that chandelier's coming down. It's gonna almost kill someone.
Whether you guess it or not, my point is, if that's all you've got with the movie halfway over, I'm really disappointed with the idea that you're not telling me more. I really thought the last two and three were about feeding us information so that we could look at one as something more interesting than what it was.
I mean, you don't enjoy learning about Hittite fertility symbols?
I feel like we've had this scene numerous times now where they go and consult the internet. And what? We're already way ahead of you. We know that there's a coven. When you hear cars late at night and someone's at the house where the girl's not supposed to be, we know it's the coven. They already told us that.
But we didn't know they were Hittites. We learned something here. They're Hittites.
But yeah, but now they've changed the rules and they got to do a virgin sacrifice and like it's becoming this, which is fine. If we got to see a human sacrifice, I would kill to see a kill in one of these films.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like what they're teasing is stuff we already knew. When she goes over to the neighbor's house and the woman's at the gate or whatever, I'm like, we know who they are now.
Yes.
Like, you can't play this game anymore because you already told us too much in the third movie.
But it's just confusing why they've all shown up on that night. Katie's gone. She's in the hospital, maybe.
No, she was never in the hospital, right?
Ambulances came.
Again, which is why you would blame the mom, because the mom came down and the daughter shut the laptop. And then the mom's like, oh, the kid's coming over here. I went over and I talked to her. And oh, yeah, she called me and told me she was coming back. Like, the mom is always like the most informed about what's going on next door. But the symbols, again, that Wyatt, like, it's a poltergeist moment again, but, like, he wakes up in the middle of the night and goes to talk to the TV people or the video game people.
The Xbox people, Bill Gates.
Yeah, I can't hear you. Like, I mean, these are literally quotes from Poltergeist. What does it want? Again, like, I think we're owed that. I think this movie owed us to tell us what the fate of Wyatt is going to be. We already know that there's occultists.
The only thing this movie owes us is scares. That is the only thing we're owed. If it scares you, it doesn't matter what story it tells. It's promising to be frightening. It's not promising to be fulfilling. And so the question is, if you're not getting the story you want, and it sounds like you're really angry about not getting the story you want, Stuart, are any of the scares working? And I'm going to guess the answer is no, because they never have for you.
No! Let's reverse that. What's working for you?
Yeah, are you scared when that knife flies up in the air and the mom just can't find it anymore?
Actually, I find myself realizing the more money they have, the less scary any of it is, because they can do more. Because they can CGI a green dot boy, because they can pull knives to the ceilings and drop chandeliers. It all feels a little too Hollywood, and so it's less scary.
See, and that still feels very small to me. Like,
yeah, too much money would be like Haunting 1999, where like a face forms in the doorway and it starts eating people or something.
But understand what I'm talking about is, I mean, we started with the rawest of movies.
No, we didn't. We started with someone that didn't know what they were doing and filmed a bed. And now we're watching professional people that know how to set up scares do that. But I don't believe that they're engineering something you'd expect to see in a big budget horror movie or any kind of big budget movie.
I'm just saying it doesn't feel as real.
It never did. I would make the argument that up to this point, the movies were getting better. And now we're in a movie that's about as good as the first movie.
And I keep thinking each movie is worse than the last, and with number one being the best.
Yeah, for you, and I think we talked about this. It came down to a biological response. You watch that first movie and you feel fear, just innately. You tried to say that there were things going on that were so incredible, but truly, nothing in that movie happened. Nothing there is interesting. The acting is not good. You just have a biological response to watching that video and hearing those sounds.
But why is this movie, which is doing so many of the same things, we're still seeing the doors move. It's still doing the bass rumble. It's still doing loud noises.
Don't ask us why it's not working, because it never worked for us, Arnie. Why isn't it working for you?
Yeah, I don't think this is any worse than the first movie. I think it's about on par. If anything, there's more going on than in the first movie.
Maybe it's on par, but part four, I'm sick of it. Like, this is the worst for me.
Any part four is going to struggle with that. At a certain point, what you are famous for, people anticipate, and trying to punk us with, aha, it's actually Wyatt, not Robbie. I mean, again, it seems desperate. They don't know what to do. My guess is the timeline of having to chug out another movie, they weren't ready. Like, everything that they set themselves up for after the last movie, they weren't ready to answer with this movie. Which makes you wonder, why did they do it then? Like, why tell us things and then barely have any new information?
Well, and I do kind of agree with Arnie. If, like, this was scary, I would care less about the actual story and the explanation. But it would still be back there, but it would make this go down easier. But this fails on both sides. It's not scary, and it's not a satisfying story. That's the problem with it.
You told me Coven, and you told me Toby. And now you're not telling me anything about that? No, I resent that. Yes, I think anyone would.
I don't know that people were going to this for the dense mythology, but then again, not a lot of people went to this one.
But they want to know what happened to Hunter, and like, we still don't know.
Yeah, I think that's a fair response. If this is the movie to tell us what happened to that child, he somehow got adopted by this family who Alex is not adopted, right? We don't know anything about this backstory.
She could be, she might not be, who's to say?
Right, exactly. That's the kind of writing we're getting here. And now that they want him back, it's important, maybe because of his age. I don't know, it's not a birthday or anything. I don't know why they need him back in this moment. And I don't know why it takes 12 days to get him back.
It's stupid that a paranormal demon put a boy up for adoption and now wants him back. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't have a good answer for it.
There isn't one. They didn't give us one.
Yeah, I think they're exposing the thinness of the premise. Like, it's crumbling before our eyes. The whole illusion of what they were able to, through inference and just, you know, minimalism, now is exposed as being vacuous, empty, nothing there.
But they try ramping up the scares some more. I mean,
stop saying that.
I said try to ramp up scares. That is their intent.
I don't even think they're trying.
Is anything here scary for you? I didn't hear whether you thought that anything was scary.
No, nothing is scary.
Okay.
I just kept anticipating scares. I like was on the edge of my seat waiting for it to be scary. And when the movie ended, I went, wait, I never came. I never got scared.
I think at one point, like, the scares are the dad can't turn off the laptop. Like, he powers it down and then it just turns itself back on and then a knife drops off the ceiling.
I think that's a comedy bit. The joke is that we know the knife is coming back down. We've known that ever since the knife went up. And so when he's leaning in and his face is there, I'm expecting to hear the thud. I'm expecting to see the life go out of his eyes. I'm expecting him to die in front of us. And so the fact that he walks away and then the knife falls is kind of... it's a surprise, but it's also kind of a cheat.
I just want to know how high their ceilings are that they didn't notice a knife stuck in it. Like, I feel like if I walked into my kitchen and there was a knife in the ceiling, I'd notice that pretty quickly.
They have pretty tall ceilings, and I have to say, when I'm looking for a knife, I don't normally look up.
I take the room in when I walk into a room.
I also am not sure that it's in the ceiling. It may just be in the ether.
Some demon dimension?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like Poltergeist. I mean, there was the big purple cloud that the tennis balls came out of.
Sure. Why not? A good of answer is any that they're going to give.
Let me put it this way. They cut a scene. There's a Night 8, November 13th, that they just removed. It's only in the unrated, where you get a very wide shot of that kitchen before that knife has fallen, and it's definitely not in the ceiling.
Yeah, and that night, like, there's books that are always falling. We see one fall on that night. I'm like,
yeah, who came up with that? You know what would be really scary? A book falls in front of the camera, okay?
This Toby is merely a nuisance. He's, again, going to pester you. He's just going to, I'm going to fuck with you. I'm going to push a book. You put it back, I'm pushing it again.
Well, I'm like, what books are they? I thought he was going to have some kind of hint on what to do about this Toby situation.
Right. There's a book lying open. It's orange. I've never seen a book with orange pages. I'm like, ooh, what's, it's open for a reason. It's right there in the foreground of the shot. What does it say? I don't know. Never got a close up. Never mattered. No, they've been waiting this whole time to do the thing where, you know, who's Robbie's mom? And they finally do this thing where Robbie leads the kid back over there. Alex follows them with the camera because, I don't know, at this point, she's trying to document anything she thinks weird about Robbie. And there she is. She runs into Katie, and Katie's not looking like she just got out of the hospital. And the mom is covering for this woman and saying, oh, yeah, I knew that she was home and taking Robbie back. And they look like they're colluding.
Yes, absolutely.
Again, I just thought Alex was out of the loop. I never thought the mother was in on it.
No, the daughter's going to get drugged. And then when the dad's like, the knife just fell on me, she's like, eh, who cares?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, because the mom's going to give her like one of her prescription sleeping pills. And the dad loses his shit over that.
Yeah. There are so many ways that that mom at this point is looking like, okay, and plus we know it's all women, right? And like that there's this whole secret society of normal looking women, but they're all in on something. The fact that she's been so okay with taking over Robbie and what's going on, and that they adopted this Wyatt and that he's this missing evil kid. Yeah, I'm looking at her. But what happens, like there's another moment where like she puts Wyatt in the bath and he gets pulled under. Does he come up possessed?
I thought he was already possessed. He's Hunter.
No, he gets baptized here.
Is that what it is? Is that some Hittite thing?
Yeah, this is the evil baptism that when he comes up, now he's Hunter.
I just wanted to know, like, what this favorite movie of his that he was watching, because it sounded like 1940s, like, Looney Tunes. There's no dialogue going on. Just this, like, real old-timey music. That disturbed me more than any of the potential drowning.
And yet they could afford Rob Zombie during the dance party scene.
Was that Rob Zombie?
That wasn't even Rob Zombie. That was White Zombie. That was some old, ready, off the shelf, whatever you need.
It's Dracula. It's one of the big ones.
But, okay, so let's just get to, all right, so yes, he's been turned into an evil kid, or he's at least been turned into Hunter, whatever that means. He's no longer Wyatt. If he ever was Wyatt, which again, that was just the name they gave him, but he was Hunter.
But he didn't know he was Hunter, and it wasn't until after he was pulled under that he starts saying, my name is Hunter.
He says, my name is Hunter?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, you're right. He does write it on his door. You're right. Okay. Because for a lot of the time, he's screaming, that's not my name, at invisible things.
Until the bath. And then when Alex comes in and calls him Wyatt, he goes, no, my name is Hunter.
Okay, whatever. Again, but then he'll hide from Katie when Katie's coming for him. So again, I never can get a bead on what this kid is and what his level of collaboration is.
Yeah, there's a really cool shot when Alex is given that prescription sleeping pill that really concerns the dad. Like, Wyatt comes in there and, like, makes her levitate above the bed. I'm like, I thought that was pretty cool. Like, obviously, like, a harness, and they erase the wires, but...
Oh, yeah, you can see the harness under her.
Yeah, you can see where it's wrapped around her torso, but no, it was still cool. Like, I was still going with that moment, but it doesn't mean anything. And then, like, yeah, we just see Hunter written on the wall.
Yeah, later, she's going to be almost killed in the garage. I mean, that's a slow way to die.
I was yelling, break the car open and like shut it off. She finally does it. She drives out through the garage, like just tears the whole thing apart.
Yeah, I mean, to fill up a room with exhaust, it would take a while. But anyway, that's not the point. That's called a quibble. The real thing is this is not scary. This is not why we came to see this movie. This moment of like choking in a garage while Katie is trying to get Wyatt, who won't leave the closet now. Again, what is going on with these kids? Spank him and take him back to hell or wherever you're going. Like, I'm tired of this futzing around. Whatever you're doing, you're taking way too long.
Just get it over with.
I'll agree with that. Again, after the 1 hour mark, I really wanted it to escalate more than it ever will in this movie. But when it finally does come on night 13, it comes really fast and out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which maybe that's part of the design, is that you haven't thought that we were at the end, but we are. Like, it's midday, and the mom, who, again, I thought was really looking evil at this point, like, no, she's going to be lifted up and smashed to the ground by Katie.
Did Katie do it with her own hands? I didn't see Katie in that scene. I thought it was Toby.
Well, I mean, Katie walks out of the magic sofa space and then stands there.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's been possessed. We've seen her do this in all the films.
But listen, Katie has Terminator strength, okay? She's going to snap another neck here as ridiculously as she did at the end of part two.
It is so crazy.
So when you say Katie does this, I literally picture super strong Katie smashing this woman like WWE.
No, she's like doing some incantation to, yeah.
No, I mean, no, it's invisible forces. The paranormal throws her splatting to the ground.
And that was funny to me. That was Wile E. Coyote splat. I'm like, oh, fall down, go boom.
And again, I ask, these are guys that are like of that generation. Like, I feel like they are kind of making a silly movie. Like, I feel like their hearts aren't in trying to scare us. Everything feels like it's a episode of Punk'd, and nothing feels like it's a found footage horror movie.
Yeah, I definitely feel that when we get to Ben's death and like his, they almost just twist his head like all the way around. It's so ridiculous looking.
And poor Katie Featherston, she was never trained to be a badass, and it shows. You know, yeah. She is not a neck snapper. The fact that they had her do it in part two was unfortunate, and the fact that they have her do it here again is just sad.
I just want to put it out there. Katie as Spectre of Evil is an epic fail. Always has been. This actress has never been scary. Her presence, nothing about her doesn't feel suburban and safe. There's nothing satanic. Like, she just can't do it. She's not equipped to do this.
Well, she's going to get her demon face back, though, in this one. When Alex goes over to her house, apparently Alex's dad's dragged over there, and Alex runs into the demon house to find her dad and brother. And when she sees Katie, Katie finally has the demon face back from that brief glimpse at the end of part one.
Well, she's had it before. She had it as a small child in the third movie.
True.
She is the demon. I mean, I feel, again, not that I really care to parse this out at any point, but I do believe that she is the source of all the evil. For all of this, like, hand-wringing about Wyatt/Hunter, like, she's the thing that the devil loves most. She didn't keep the sister around. Like, there's so many other family members that could be involved, but for whatever reason, I think it's just sentimental value. Because Katie Featherston has been around since the first movie, we hold on to her as some kind of Freddy Krueger or Jason.
But we're never going to find out what happens to the dad. Alex jumps out a window to escape Katie, and there's Wyatt/Hunter and a whole load of witches.
Like, how many witches? Like, it's a very brief glimpse, but it feels like way too many.
About 30. I would guess about 30 women there in the yard. It's a nice jump. I'm not going to take that away from them. It is the biggest surprise of the movie, and it is the last surprise of the movie that this is the end of Alex.
And in that night vision camera, they do look appropriately creepy with giant pupils.
Yeah, but I do think you're right to feel, I know I certainly did, when it was over, I was like, what did I learn? What happened here? What was the journey? And Alex is a disposable character who had no relationship to any of what we've seen before, and basically just cuckolded some bestie to tape a bunch of very limp jump scares. Like, I don't know that I learned anything about Toby, Katie, or Hunter.
You didn't, Stuart, because there's nothing here to learn.
This movie is intentionally not about learning, but the question is, can you have a good time?
I'm not buying this premise. The intention is to imply through inference. What we don't want to have to say things. We want you to figure things out. It's what's going on in the background. It's what a character casually says as they walk out the door that you're supposed to go, oh, there's the missing piece.
Yeah, I'm not sure where you get this, Arnie, that this film intentionally didn't want to teach us anything. I think it's just incompetent.
Yeah, I think, and quite the opposite, I think it would very much like to keep the ball up in the air, but it's come crashing down. It's pretty obvious the knife has plunged to the earth and killed at least these directors. They're out of the picture. They won't be back.
I'm just saying, when you write a script and you don't add anything to it, you know you didn't add anything to it. And so you must think there's something else there.
They're thinking, we're only spending $5 million. It's going to make a lot more. It doesn't matter.
They're thinking, oh my God, this has to be out in 3 months. Keep in mind, they were filming in June with it coming out in October. So if things weren't working, I imagine there probably was a thought at some point. My guess, I have no evidence of this. My guess is, looking at the rushes, they might have said, you know what? Maybe we'll let this release pass and try to tape more things. And then when the dad died, you know, he had a heart attack and about a month and a half before this movie came out, any opportunity to do any more reshoots, at least with him, obviously.
Oh, the actual actor died.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And he is actually married to the woman playing his wife. They are a real life couple. They thought that naturalism would come through. And according to Arnie, it does. But yeah, they couldn't do reshoots with him.
Which explains why I think that whole failing marriage plot falls apart and never really goes anywhere.
Yeah, no, they should have done something with the mom, that she was part of this coven. They really should have just gone with that. I could infer things from that at least.
Yeah, I think it was there and then they pulled back on it for whatever reason.
Well, Jacob Stewart, summarize why you don't recommend Paranormal Activity 4. Jacob.
No, I don't have to teach you anything. I just got to talk for an hour and release a podcast. That's how things work now. We don't need any substance. Just take up time. Look, people, I still don't understand you. This still made 11 times its money. I don't know why.
It made more than Sinister.
Oh, that, I don't understand people in general, I guess. Because, look, a CineScore of C is way too generous. Like, go lower, because this is the lowest for me. Partly, it is a part four, so, like, I know the formula. There's not much to this formula, but there's something there, and I know what to expect. But, yeah, the most frustrating thing is you didn't go anywhere with the lore. Hunter and Robbie, and you just asked more questions. You didn't give me anything. You didn't give me any scares. Nothing. Nothing at all. So, yeah, not recommend. There, summed it up for you.
Stuart.
I agree. It's not that this is bad or even a huge drop-off in quality. The problem is you're calling it Paranormal Activity, and where's the activity? Nothing is happening. Nothing. We were told covens and imaginary friends named Toby and this quest to sire a male child so that Satan can do something to bring about the apocalypse or whatever. And basically, after setting us up for all of that with that trilogy, you go, I don't know. Let's just have a cute girl run around with her laptop. And the problem is that I feel like the cute girl is actually too Hollywood, and the laptop gimmick just doesn't play in the era of, people Skyping and staying at home. Like, it's just not novel to see a movie done in this way. And so, yeah, I find this thing idling right there with the first film. It's not scary to me. It's not telling me anything. And it's acting like it doesn't have to. Give me my $100 million. I deserve it by this point. It's this entitled teenager that really ought to be spanked and sent to its room. And so I'm glad that probably the person that got scared the most by this is Blum. And what I'm hoping that means is that they're going to be spooked into trying harder next time, accelerating the storyline, and giving us more activity. But this is a not recommend.
And for me, this is a weaker not recommend.
Three reds, we did it.
Yeah, I knew it would be this one. There's no one likes this one. I mean, again, what could you say nice?
Arnie?
I gave this one every advantage again. I watched it late at night in a dark room. And because of the first film, I went in prepared to be scared and actually not wanting to be scared, kind of annoyed at the thought of being scared, because it really affected me with that first movie. And it's been a little while since I saw that first movie. So I sat down, gave myself to this one, and it tries, I think, to be like the first ones. it does the opening door, it does the loud noises, but in the end, again, I think that the ability to try and go bigger with the scares makes me less afraid because I'm seeing the harness. I'm seeing the CGI little boy. I'm thinking about how these things were done instead of just being invested in this movie. I do think the acting is the best of the four Paranormal Activities. I feel like it actually does have music you've heard of and things. It feels like they put some money on screen, but what they didn't put on screen were the scares.
They had to buy an Xbox for it.
Yeah, maybe the Kinect paid for the Rob Zombie music, the Kinect product placement, but no, I'm let down. I put this one right on par with part three for me. And
what?
Three's the best one.
Explain that. I know you didn't like the twist of the coven, but up until that point, there was a lot going on for that movie.
Yeah, and it never got under my skin. And this one never got under my skin. But I liked the family well enough. I wish there was more of the mother and father and their marital spat. But I really like creepy young Robbie. I think he's as good a creepy little kid as you'll find in, you know, a Carol Ann or a Damien.
Come on. That kid was nothing. You wouldn't even be able to recognize him.
So, I mean, yeah, it's a not recommend in the end. So, unfortunately. But did you guys stay for the credits and see the after credits scene?
No.
Oh, I didn't notice one. I forwarded through, but no, nothing showed up.
Well, that's because they removed it from home video.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
But if you saw this in theaters and stayed till the end of the credits, there was a 30-second scene at the end of this movie teasing Paranormal Activity 5.
Are 29 seconds static shots in the dark and then 1 second of a noise?
It's some found footage in a little store. I couldn't tell if it was like a New York corner store or if they had a lot of like statues. I couldn't tell if it was an occult store. And a Spanish-speaking woman shows up and starts telling everyone to leave and says, this is only the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever that means.
Yeah.
It means that our next movie is going to be what they call an essay movie. Paranormal Activity 5 goes to the barrio.
Yeah, I heard that it's a spinoff, or whatever that means. I mean, at this point, it probably doesn't have Katie, is I guess what they're telling me. No Katie.
Is it going to be called Paranormal Activity in the Hood?
Paranormal Activity, The Marked Ones.
And we're not going to do that next week. We're taking a couple weeks off from all of this Paranormal Activity to see other frightening apparitions.
Well, yeah, it's December, the month of the Jellicle Ball.
I know that you've wanted to do it ever since you got your first taste.
Since Christmas 2019 when I saw it in theaters.
I just want to put it out there. Cats, your experience with it is this movie first. First and foremost, you didn't know the songs. You didn't see it on stage. You saw this travesty that came out in, yeah, it was only 2 years ago.
Yeah, I remember the commercials as a little kid and thinking, oh, that's sophisticated adult stuff because it's Broadway. But yeah, I'd never seen it. My passion for this film comes from the screen, not the stage.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, yes, it'll be so much fun to celebrate the season with you next week for patrons. We're going to do that Cats movie.
Jellicles can and Jellicles do listen when they're a $10 patron at Podbean or Patreon.
And then the week after that, we got to do some pickups. We're going back to The Matrix. Resurrections will be out at Christmas time, and we'll cover it the following week before we get back to Paranormal Activity 5.
So thank you for your support. Hopefully you can join us for the next two shows. If not, have a very happy holidays. We'll talk to you in the new year when we get back to the present.
Once again, thank you for supporting Now Playing, and we hope you've enjoyed this bonus movie review.
You know, I've heard of spirit photography before, but I've never actually seen it in person.
It's your support that keeps Now Playing operating.
We're so grateful that you're here. Thank you so much.
The The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the views of Venganza Media Incorporated.
This isn't Casper, the fucking friendly ghost you're chasing, man.
Venganza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with, and this podcast has not been prepared, approved, or licensed by any entity that created the film analyzed herein. All movie clips and music included in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders.
I think that probably was illegal in Kentucky, you know, the 12 states.
They are included here for the purpose of review, and no infringement is intended. Now Playing Podcast is an exclusive trademark of and may not be used without the express written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated.
A final ritual, and that's where he's going to be.
Is she sure? Then we should call the cops.
Call the cops and tell them what?
Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2021, and no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
Fuck this shit, I'm done.
And yet they could afford Rob Zombie during the dance party scene.
Was that Rob Zombie?
That wasn't even Rob Zombie. That was White Zombie. That was some old, ready, off the shelf, whatever you need.
It's Dracula. It's one of the big ones.
I think you're holding on to an image of Rob Zombie that I've let go a long time ago.
Can't take away his rock and roll cred.
I actually can. Yeah, I feel like that's long gone.